Good afternoon. I'm Anthony Noble, and I represent the appellant, Jose Espino-Paez. In this case, Mr. Espino-Paez came to the United States when he was a teenager, and he came with his family, and he applied for permanent residency, and it was his intention to remain in the United States to start a career and build a family. And in 1996, he was charged with possession of a Schedule II controlled substance, and he entered a guilty plea to a deferred judgment. A year later, he successfully completed the deferred judgment, and for some reason, for some immigration law reason, he wasn't able to pursue his application for lawful permanent residency until he waited for 10 years. So what he did is, in September 2011, he filed his application to become a lawful permanent resident, and then a few months later that application was denied because of the deferred judgment that was entered in this case. So he filed a Rule 35C motion, and at the time the Supreme Court in Cazardi hadn't issued its opinion, so it wasn't clear whether or not the remedy was under Rule 35C or whether it was under Rule 32D. So he filed in the alternative, claiming that he was denied effective assistance of counsel by his attorney's failure to advise him of the immigration consequences of the deferred judgments. That motion was denied under Rule 35C. The district court found that he had sufficiently alleged deficient performance, but that he hadn't sufficiently alleged prejudice. So he appealed. In the meantime, the Supreme Court announced its decision in Cazardi, explaining that the appropriate remedy for challenging a deferred judgment is under Rule 32D and not under Rule 35C. So there are really two issues for the court to decide first. You know, the first is the decision that was made by the district court, you know, whether or not he sufficiently alleged prejudice. And then the second issue is the issue that was raised by the Attorney General, whether there's a right under Rule 32D, considering that he successfully completed his deferred judgment. I think the first issue is easy to resolve. In this case, he's clearly established or clearly alleged that he was prejudiced by any deficient performance of his attorney. At the time that he pleaded guilty, he had lived in the United States for 3 years. He came here with his family, his entire family. It was his intention to become a lawful permanent resident, and he actually had this application pending for lawful permanent residency. And it was his goal to remain in the United States, to build a career here, and then raise a family. So under those circumstances, those allegations are sufficient to establish prejudice.
Mr. Noble, I'm a little bit confused by on the question of prejudice, because I'm not sure from your brief whether you think that we can simply reverse based upon the record that was presented, or whether your view is that we should remand for an evidentiary hearing or some other further proceedings on the issue of prejudice.
Well, that's a good question, Your Honor, because if this were an allegation under Rule 35C, then the allegations would be accepted as true, and the remedy would be to reverse the order denying post-conviction relief and then remand for an evidentiary hearing. Now, what we know from the Supreme Court's decision in Cazardi is that these claims are now have to be considered under Rule 32D, which is a slightly different standard. The standard here is whether or not there's a fair and just reason for withdrawal of the plea. And the Supreme Court in Cazardi explained that ineffective assistance of counsel would be a fair and just reason for withdrawal of the plea. So without considering whether or not the court has jurisdiction under Rule 32D, the allegations here are sufficient under Rule 32D to require an evidentiary hearing on his claim of ineffective assistance of counsel.
Based on the allegations of the motion that was originally filed, is that what your position is?
That's correct, Your Honor. Okay. Yes.
Mr. Neville, if you could help me, where I'm struggling a little bit, maybe you can direct your comments here, is the deferred judgment statute says that if the person fully complies, which your client did, and they comply with all the conditions of the deferred judgment, that the case is dismissed with prejudice. So doesn't the trial court lose jurisdiction? What exactly would happen if we remanded on a 32D? There's no case pending.
Well, technically there's no case pending. And I mean, really, there are two questions there. The first is whether or not a case is pending, and then the second question is whether or not the court has jurisdiction. I think the first question is easy to answer, because even though under the state statute the deferred judgment or the guilty plea has been withdrawn and the charges have been dismissed, there's still a deferred judgment which is being considered as a conviction for immigration purposes that's having lifelong and permanent effects on Mr. Espino-Paez. And the second question about jurisdiction, well, Rule 32D doesn't limit jurisdiction in any way. Under Rule 32D, the claim can be pursued so long as the guilty plea has been entered and sentence has not been imposed yet. So, strictly applying the Kazadi opinion, there's no reason why Rule 32D shouldn't apply.
Except that the Kazadi opinion dealt with a situation where the deferred judgment had not yet been dismissed, whereas here it has been dismissed. So are you aware of any case that's addressed the situation we have here?
I don't think there are any cases from this stage, Your Honor. I'm not aware of any cases that have addressed this since Kazadi or even prior to Kazadi.
So what is your response to the people's argument that there's no remedy whatsoever in state court for Mr. Espino-Paez, and that his only remedy is in federal court?
Well, there isn't any remedy in federal court, Your Honor. The immigration courts don't allow a collateral attack of a state conviction. And I mean, that's what's clear from the Padilla decision, is that in the U.S. Supreme Court in Padilla recognized how draconian the immigration laws are and how, you know, these kind of convictions result in not only mandatory deportation, but denial of any kind of relief in immigration court. But there's no way that he can attack this conviction in immigration court. The burden is on the state. And this is something that Padilla has done. It's pushed this burden to the state to resolve these kind of issues that result in immigration consequences. Now, whether or not the state should leave somebody like Mr. Espino-Paez without a remedy, you know, that's a different question. And that just seems inequitable that the state would do that, that he's somebody that has successfully completed his deferred judgment, assuming that there was a serious constitutional violation here. You know, why should he be left without any remedy at all? It's clear that there's no remedy under Rule 35C. There's no remedy under federal habeas corpus, or there's no remedy under state habeas corpus. There's absolutely no remedy here, and the only remedy that the Supreme Court has given us, or that the rules give us, are under Rule 32D. And again,
just a question, a follow-up. Did the defendant's lawyer ask for relief under 32D when he or she filed a motion?
Yes, he did.
Okay, so he asked for both, and
yes,
the judge denied it on 35C and ignored the 32D.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay, so I'm not going to speak for the people, but it would appear that they were also suggesting a remand. Is that your reading of what they've suggested?
Well, it seems that the Attorney General has made three requests. You know, the first one being that the court doesn't have any jurisdiction and there is no remedy under any provision or any rule. The second one is that if the court does have jurisdiction, then the case should be remanded for an evidentiary hearing. And then the third
one. But only on 32D.
That's correct. And that's what we're asking for as well. I mean, we're not challenging the Supreme Court's decision in Kazadi. We accept that the Supreme Court has ruled and that the remedy here is under Rule 32D. Now, the third thing that the Attorney General has suggested is that all of these cases should go to the Supreme Court directly under Rule 21, which doesn't seem to be a very practical application of the rule, because the Supreme Court is just not set up to hear evidentiary issues like ineffective assistance of counsel. So really, the only remedy that's available for Mr. Espino-Paez is in the Rule 32D. And if you deny him this remedy, then he's got no remedy for a serious constitutional violation. And if you want to put this into context, there are three different types of claims that could be pursued by non-citizens that are trying to withdraw a plea for immigration consequences. One could be someone that's been given a deferred judgment and has revoked that deferred judgment because of a law violation, gets the best remedy. They get a remedy under Rule 35C. Then there's the person that moves to withdraw the plea during the term of deferral, they get to move to withdraw their plea under Rule 32D. Then, if you follow the Attorney General's reasoning, we've got this third class of people. These are the people that have done everything right. They've successfully completed their deferred judgment, but they have absolutely no remedy at all for a constitutional violation. So if you adopt the Attorney General's reasoning, then you're going to be setting up this system that the people that commit the law violations get the best remedy, and the people that have done everything right get no remedy at all. So there has to be a remedy available for people like Mr. Espino Paez. And I know that this is not the only case in the state. I've got other cases, and there are other cases working their way up through the courts as well. So there really does need to be some guidance on, you know, how do we pursue these constitutional violations.
If there is a gap in remedies, though, isn't that an issue for the legislature, not the courts?
Well, it could be an issue for the courts as well, because the Supreme Court writes the rules. But does the legislature intend to leave people that have suffered a serious constitutional violation without a remedy? I would say no.
If it were remanded to the court for 32D and the court found no ineffective assistance of counsel, that would moot out the issue, wouldn't it?
Yes, I mean, Your Honor, he may appeal that denial, right. And then, you know, he'd have an abuse of discretion standard.
Right.
So that may or may not help him. But yeah, what we're asking for here is a remand to the district court so the court can consider the claim of ineffective assistance under Rule 32D so that it gives him the opportunity to prove that he was denied effective assistance of counsel so that he can withdraw his plea.
But I'm not sure why you're asking for that remedy. What would happen under a remand that didn't already happen?
Well, he would get an evidentiary hearing, Your Honor, rather than just a summary dismissal of his claims.
You said before that under a Rule 32D motion that the court doesn't, unlike a 35C motion, the court doesn't have to accept the allegations of the petition as true. So is that the difference that would trigger an evidentiary hearing here?
Yeah, it's a different standard, Your Honor. There's more discretion given under Rule 32D. But ultimately, what it comes down to is if he can prove ineffective assistance of counsel, then he's established a fair and just reason for withdrawal of the plea. So really, I'm not sure if there's any distinction between a claim of ineffective assistance under Rule 35C and under Rule 32D. But ultimately, you know, what he needs here is the evidentiary hearing so he can prove his claims and withdraw his plea.
Well, if that's so, then haven't we come for full circle and brought us back to the position of whether Mr. Espino Paez sufficiently alleged prejudice in his motion?
Exactly, Your Honor. And as for the reason I've stated, you know, these allegations are sufficient to establish prejudice.
Okay, thank you.
And I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. You have 1 minute and 48 seconds.
May it please the court, my name is Emmy Langley, registration number 39075, and I represent the people in this matter. Because the defendant completed his deferred judgment, the defendant has neither a guilty plea nor a charge against him in this case.
Cut to the chase. Okay. The Supreme Court has said he can't proceed on his 35C. We're all in agreement, right?
That's correct.
Okay, so now his only recourse is under 32D. He asked for that relief, correct?
I would say he doesn't have a 32D.
He may not have it.
Okay.
Often defendants don't have it, but he alleged it down in the trial court. He asked, according to your opponent at least, he asked for 32D relief and 35C.
Yes.
The trial judge made no mention of 32D, did not rule on it.
Correct.
So we now know the 35C argument is gone as a matter of law. Why can't we remand back for findings by the trial court on the 32D? Right or wrong, we have nothing to look at on that
Because it shouldn't be remanded because the case should be dismissed because there's no guilty plea. So if he's filing a motion to withdraw his guilty plea under 32D...
But 32D says, doesn't talk about guilty plea, talks about before sentence. He can make a motion before he's sentenced, correct?
Correct.
And has he been sentenced?
He has not been sentenced.
Okay, so why can't he then file a motion for 32D? I'm not saying it'll be successful.
He did already file a motion.
He filed it, but the judge didn't rule on it.
Correct, but I think my argument is because he has no guilty plea, he can't move to withdraw it under CRIMP 32D. Right now, there is no guilty plea. So if he moves to withdraw it, there's nothing to withdraw. So there's no need to remand for him, for the judge to rule on a 32D. Right now, there are no charges. So if you remanded this case for a 32D, the court would have no jurisdiction over it because the judge or the defendant's facing no charges. The prosecution has no charges filed against him. So therefore, the court, basically, there's a separation of powers issue because since there are no charges, there's no plea. The prosecution would have to reinstate charges for him to have some type of case to ask to have his guilty plea withdrawn.
Well, from the court, the immigration point of view, there is a plea because they're denying him, they're deporting him based on a plea.
Correct.
So there is a plea.
There is no plea in state court.
Okay.
So as far as his action in state court, there is no plea.
If there's no plea, why is he being deported?
That's an issue of federal law, and I think that's where, you know, I understand that it doesn't make a lot of sense, but the way that it doesn't make sense is the way that the federal government is interpreting it. Here, there's no charges, there's no conviction, there's no plea, there's nothing for him to attack in state court. He has no remedy in state court. If you were to remand, and even if there was an evidentiary hearing on ineffective assistance of counsel, the remedy would be, well, first of all, there couldn't be a remedy because there'd be no charges, but even if you found ineffective assistance of counsel, the remedy would be to withdraw a plea that's already been withdrawn, so it would essentially be an advisory opinion by the district court, and I don't think that that's proper.
Ms. Langley, one of the things you mentioned in your brief was that the defendant may have a remedy in federal court. Could you expound upon that, please?
I think if, I guess I'm not as familiar with federal law as Mr. Noble is, but I mean, and...
Well, he said there's no remedy whatsoever under federal law. Do you agree with that?
I can't speak to the specifics in this case, but I do think if you challenge the way, you could somehow challenge the way that the federal statute interprets our law, because our law says he has no conviction, he has no guilty plea, he has no charges in this case, and if the federal government is interpreting it as differently from that, then that's something that he can assert in federal court as to the constitutionality of that. And I don't like to try to figure out what arguments that he can make in federal court, but I mean, this, because we keep looking at the immigration court considers this a plea, you know, the federal statutes consider this a plea, this is further emphasizes my point that this is a federal issue. Here, he has no case.
Well, as I understand it, under federal law, a deferred judgment is, whether it's a plea or not, it constitutes a conviction for purposes of federal immigration law. Is that your understanding?
I think so.
So the question is not whether there is, or one question might be whether there is an interpretation of federal law that could provide a remedy. The other question is whether there's any state law remedy whatsoever. And I gather from your brief that the suggestion that you make is that there could be a CAR 21 proceeding.
If in the case that if the deferred judgment was not already completed, there would be a Rule 20, there would be an option for a Rule 21.
Oh, so your position then in this case is that CAR 21 would
does
not apply,
not apply
either?
That's correct.
So then that if either Mr. Espino Paez would have a remedy in federal court or he would have no remedy whatsoever?
His remedy, he's already gotten his remedy that he's asking for, a 32D, is to withdraw a plea, and he's already been able to do that.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand what you just said. Could you repeat it?
His remedy in filing a CRIM P32D that Kazadi talks about is a motion to withdraw a guilty plea. The deferred judgment explicitly states that his guilty plea is already withdrawn and he has no charges against him anymore. So my position is that he's already gotten the remedy that he's asking for.
Apparently he hasn't gotten the remedy that he's asking for, because his remedy is to nullify or somehow set aside or completely abrogate the deferred judgment because of the collateral consequences it has under federal immigration law.
Well, I would rephrase then. He's already gotten the only possible remedy he can get in state court. Right now he has no charges against him by the prosecution. There's no other remedy he can get in state court unless the prosecution refiles charges against him. There's no case in the district court.
Wouldn't there be a case if we remanded? In other words, let's assume, again, we don't know what the merits of his case are, but he's saying, if my lawyer had told me I would be deported, even with a deferred judgment, then I would have done something else. I would have gone to trial and taken my chances. Do you agree that that's his argument? But he hasn't had a chance anywhere to make that argument and to have a judge rule on it, even though he filed a 32D, and even though our Supreme Court in Kazadi said he has a remedy under 32D. Now, I grant you, in this case, it's different than Kazadi because it's over. Mm-hmm. It's not in the middle. But I'm not sure why he can't go back and have the court look at the 32D and the alleged constitutional violation and make findings. At that point, it would be ripe. There are two things that could happen. Follow my train, if you will, because we're struggling with this just like you are. Let's say he goes back and the court says his lawyer was fine. His lawyer was good enough. Mm-hmm. That ends the case, doesn't it?
Yes.
He loses. The other possibility is the judge says, yes, the lawyer wasn't good enough, should have told him, and I'm going to let him vacate this conviction. At that point, you have a remedy, which is either to take it to the Supreme Court to block it or to appeal it, correct?
I don't understand. I guess what is his remedy if he wins and if he shows ineffective assistance
to have the court in Denver? Well, and one, that's a good question. The court in Denver is going to say, what are they thinking on the Court of Appeals? What have they sent me? All right, he should have told the defendant. And so I'm going to vacate this conviction.
The conviction?
It's not a conviction. I'm going to vacate the deferred judgment and seal it and say goodbye to the deferred. There is no longer a deferred judgment. Therefore, there is no longer a deportation. Now what?
Well, he would be filing a 32D, and a 32D is to withdraw a guilty plea. So if he's able to show ineffective assistance of counsel, the only remedy for him at that point is to withdraw a guilty plea.
Or vacate the results of the guilty plea. Or vacate whatever there is in the Denver District Court. That would leave you with an issue, very viable issue.
I guess I disagree that they could do more at that point. I mean, a 32D is only to withdraw a guilty plea that's already been withdrawn in this case. So beyond that, there's no vacating anything because there's no plea already. There's no charges. So you'd be vacating charges that have already been withdrawn. So I just don't follow you on that second point, because even if he's able to show ineffective assistance of counsel, he's asking for a remedy in state court that he's already received.
Is it more like a quorum nobis, where he's in quorum nobis, lawyers come in years later and move to set aside a guilty plea on the grounds that it was unconstitutional or there were collateral consequences? Maybe that's the nature of what he's doing. I don't know. I'm asking you.
I would guess that that case is a lot different because in those cases, the guilty plea, a defendant still has a conviction in his or her past. Here, there's no conviction in their past. And if the defendant is able to show ineffective assistance of counsel, if you remand this case, the only type of opinion that the district court could give would be an advisory opinion, which is improper. I think, if you're asked, going back to my original point, he has already had his guilty plea withdrawn. The prosecution has already withdrawn the charges against him. Remanding for an evidentiary hearing would essentially force the prosecution to refile charges against him, which is a separation of powers issue. And I just don't see how procedurally we could ever get there. And I understand that, it doesn't make sense, but the reason that it doesn't make sense that somebody with a conviction would have a remedy is the federal statute. Or I guess the deferred judgment, the legislature could modify the deferred judgment statute, but if the defendant is challenging the way that the deferred judgment statute works, I'm here to say that the deferred judgment statute, the plain language of it, says that his charges have been dismissed and the prosecution does not have any filed against him right now. And then to the extent that the federal government or the federal statutes don't consider our law the way that we consider our law, that's an issue of federal law. So I guess an evidentiary hearing really would not accomplish anything because the only remedy would be an advisory opinion or force the prosecution to file charges again, which I don't
think. Or to appeal if the judge issued a ruling down in the district court that vacated it, and you would have remedy if you thought the court erred or lacked jurisdiction.
Well, I think this court lacks jurisdiction, so I think it would be improper to even remand it there.
We don't have jurisdiction over the denial of the 32D. That's your position?
That's my second position. But I think that no court right now has jurisdiction over this case because it doesn't exist. But if you think that this case exists, then it doesn't belong here. It belongs in the Supreme Court under 21.
This is very existential, isn't it? Does the case exist, and if so, where does it exist?
If there are no further questions, I ask that this appeal be dismissed.
Thank you, counsel.
It is true that the guilty plea has been withdrawn and the charges have been dismissed, but this deferred judgment is having a permanent and lifelong effect on Mr. Espino-Paez. He's not able to adjust status, he's permanently inadmissible, and if he's ever arrested by ICE and put into removal proceedings, he has no relief and no remedies in immigration court. He's lived in this country now for over 20 years, he's married, all his family are here, he's got 4 children who are United States citizens, and his only remedy is under Rule 32D. Now, I agree that it's not a perfect remedy, and I argued against that in the Supreme Court. I advised the Supreme Court of all the problems that this will create, that these kind of cases will start making their way through the courts. But the Supreme Court didn't seem that concerned about the fact that we'd be litigating like 10, 20-year-old cases under Rule 32D. Now, it's the only remedy that he's got. He's got no remedy anywhere else under any rule, any statute, in any court. It's all he's got to address this serious constitutional violation. So you can't just dismiss this by saying that, well, the plea's already been withdrawn, the charges have been dismissed, because that's of no concern to him, because this deferred judgment is real, it exists. And because of it, he's not able to do anything with his life. He's living under this constant threat of deportation. He's not able to adjust status.
Mr. Noble, what is your response to Ms. Langley's suggestion that this could be challenged in federal court and challenge the interpretation of the federal immigration statute?
There's absolutely no remedy available in any federal court, and I think that I've outlined the the federal law in the reply brief, but we've got this long line of precedent from the federal courts that a deferred judgment is a conviction for immigration purposes, and that withdrawal of the deferred judgment under a rehabilitative statute does not take away the conviction. The only way that we can get rid of this conviction is to get it vacated on the grounds of a federal constitutional violation, such as ineffective assistance of counsel. So I'd ask the court to remand this case for an evidentiary hearing under Rule 32D. And if you have no further questions.
Well, your opponent says there's nothing to vacate. You have 28 seconds. What do you think?
Well, ask Mr. Espino-Payaz, you know, is there nothing to vacate? Why is he spending thousands of dollars on attorney's fees to try and address this deferred judgment that apparently doesn't exist? It exists, it's real, and it's having serious adverse consequences on his life. And Rule 32D is the only remedy that he's got. It's not a perfect remedy, but it's the only remedy that he's got to address these constitutional violations.
And Mr. Noble, 32D allows you to withdraw a guilty plea. But under the deferred sentence statute, his guilty plea has been statutorily withdrawn and the case dismissed with prejudice. So how can the trial court possibly act?
Well, this is what happened in Cazotti. After Cazotti was decided in the Supreme Court, we went back down for the evidentiary hearing, and by that time, he had successfully completed his deferred judgment. Now, the district court in that case, following the opinion in Cazotti, realized that the Supreme Court didn't want to leave a defendant like Mr. Cazotti in a situation where he had absolutely no remedy to address a constitutional violation. So what the district court did in that case was to vacate the dismissal of the charges and vacate the withdrawal of the plea, reinstate everything again so that he could then challenge it under Rule 32D. And then we went to the evidentiary hearing, he established the constitutional violation, and both convictions were vacated. He waived his rights under the double jeopardy clause, and his case was set for trial. So, you know, maybe you're not able to conceive of a remedy, but if you remand this to the trial court will figure it out. And if they're wrong, then they can appeal. But, you know, the thing is, the important thing is you just can't leave him without a remedy. You can't just say that there's been a serious constitutional violation, but because of the technicality, you know, he has to suffer all of these consequences. And, you know, I don't know the answer, and I think that we're all struggling with what the answer is, but ultimately it comes down to the fact that he has to have some remedy under some rule or some statute or some way of enforcing his constitutional rights.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That concludes our docket for today. Counsel, thank you for your arguments on this interesting issue of law. The case stands submitted, and an opinion will issue in due course.